When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Or did I talk to the Skypad?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Thank you so much for tuning into this interview for the Orphans Investigation. If you want to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/orphansaudio. There you can get a bunch more exclusive Orphans content. You can also follow us on social media at Orphans Audio, and you can head over to our website, orphanspod.com, for links for merchandise, Discord, and so much more.
Are you gonna introduce it, or are you gonna open
okay,
it?
Okay, yeah, yeah. What I'll do, I'll just do a quick intro. If you just give
okay,
me a
cool.
second, give me a second.
Do a quick
yeah,
intro.
Yeah. I'll do a quick intro.
Ladles and jelly spoons.
God,
welcome back to the
damn it
to the third take of this interview.
Is it the third or is it the fourth?
It's like the fourth. It might be the fourth.
I think it's the fourth.
May the fourth
yeah.
be with you.
And this, because it is the fourth take, the fourth will be with us.
Yeah.
And
there's no way this could go wrong for a fourth time.
Absolutely not. So we're here to talk a bit about the Orphans investigation, which honestly, the first time in any of these three takes that the Orphans has even come up.
Aren't you going to ask me about how I am?
Fuck. James, you all right?
What a dumb question.
Yeah, cool.
Terrible.
So
you started this first take asking me how, just like question one, how are you? What? I've got two options with that. I can tell you in high detail. Oh, not three. I can tell you in high detail how I am. I can conjure up some shaggy dog story, humorous but dark, twisted, but with a little edge of lighthearted humor in there. Just really poking fun at some people who really shouldn't be poked fun at. Just go down a dark rabbit hole of cruelty and despair, right? Or three, I could just be like, yeah, I'm good. In which case, what have we accomplished? It's a throwaway line. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thanks.
Great. I'm also pretty good. So
great.
Let's just
move on.
Right. The Orphans investigate. Sorry, hi. My name's James Barbarossa. I am... What am I? I do music for the Orphans.
You're the composer for the Orphans. Yeah.
You know, I'm general assistant, like assistant,
dude.
Occasional assistant director, occasional assistant screenwriter.
Yeah.
You know,
you are also the voice of Jeffrey.
I am the voice of Jeffrey.
And
hello.
Amos.
All right.
And
that was on the fly, my impressions of both of them. Right, I cannot remember their voices. And later on in this interview, you're going to ask me about tracks that I made, and I'm not going to remember those either.
Yeah, no, you're really not.
I just don't. I don't know anything. I know nothing.
You do stuff. You do work. Like you go into a fugue state, and then you just immediately
really
fucking forget it. Like it just leaves you.
Everything goes when I finish anything.
And then I send you back the masters, and you're like, ah.
Oh,
That's pretty good.
It's like all the memories of my relationships. You know, it's just great at the time, and then you know, on a boom. I don't know who you are,
yeah,
and you don't know me. We're done here.
Oh, is this the end of the interview?
No, I'm recounting my relationships.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So James, the Orphans investigate.
You will know when we're professionally done because I will say you and me, Zach.
Yeah.
With onion rings. Professionally.
James, the number of times you've said that.
exactly right.
And we haven't been to onion
100%.
Rings.
I would never say it and not mean it.
That's a lie.
Not once.
That's like a catchphrase. That's like your catchphrase.
I don't understand.
That's something you say constantly.
I'm confused. You're confusing me.
Okay.
I don't know what you mean.
The Orphan's Investigation.
Yes. Take control of this interview, dude.
All right. I don't know if I'm ever in control when you're in the room.
For like a second, I'm just gonna spiral with it. All right, that's so clear. That's clear to you, and it's beyond clear to me. So let's just.
So this is the first series that you've done, that we've done, that's kind of outside of that kind of isolated environment. It's in a world in itself.
That's not on the planet.
Exactly. Not on Kane.
Has it been named in the series?
Not in the series, but on Wiki it has. On our Wiki.
Sure. So it's canonical.
Canonically Kane.
Brilliant.
Also in our D&D game, we've referenced Kane.
That's not been released though.
Nah. Yeah. Nah. But in my D&D game, like
into
in
your
Ella,
D&D game.
Our personal D&D game,
sure.
It's essentially
and nothing's more canon than D&D.
Absolutely not. No.
Exactly right.
Nothing can be more canon than D&D.
Yeah. If you aren't one of the four or five people present for that, then you don't know shit about the Orphans.
Basically. It's me. It's Ella. It's Liz Campbell. It's
you haven't
Edley
even
Knight.
Watched the show unless you are present for this exclusive, really personal social gathering on your own time that you have declared as
we record
as
them. You
show
know,
show canon. You record.
We record
them.
We don't
them?
Intend to do anything with them.
Because I think we can... bonus things.
I don't think the recording quality is good enough to release. Anyways,
well, sure.
I think it's more just for record.
Yeah, well,
keeping.
Here's the thing: it's free content, and people don't have to listen to it. So you just go.
True.
These are sessions we recorded, and if you don't like the recording quality, then
deal with them.
Fair, but like, you know.
Anyways,
watch the
let's
show.
Get back on topic. What were your first impressions when you first read The Orphan's Investigation?
I didn't.
You didn't.
I never read it.
Yes, you did, though. You did.
My impressions when I first read it were...
I can't believe Zach is making me read
while
this.
While we were recording.
No, but that's not true. You did read it before you... I remember, because
really?
I put the scripts in your hand and said, James, if you don't read this, I'll kill you.
Yeah, but... Did you see me read it?
I think you did, because I think you finally like broke down and were like, fine.
Oh, sure.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
You don't remember that?
No. Nah, it's all gone.
So what were your first impressions? Tell me about your first impressions.
I'm like a robot that just auto-deletes everything at all time. No, okay, so...
You're like fucking Arium, except everything goes.
Don't bring Arium into this, dude. The 2 weeks of Star Trek Discovery that have introduced and, like, given a heartfelt, tragic goodbye to this random background character that just happened in real life.
Great.
And I've never seen anything with more gall of a thing to do as a writer, as a showrunner.
You'd be like, here's someone you love. You didn't love them before, but you love them now. By the way, zoinks!
The beautiful backstory of a stranger. Tragic and beautiful. And just like, oh, hey, you know this character? Yeah, everybody on this show loves her and is personal friends with her.
Yeah.
And here's some footage of them just hanging out and liking each other. Oh, and she's dead now.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, I've killed her.
Oopsie. That was your fault.
But no, it was your fault for loving her. Oh, you loved her and thus she died. We're off track again.
Great.
Jesus.
What were your first impressions of reading
the investigation script? Really, my first impressions of investigation as a whole were that one scene from Facility with Evers and Strange in a spaceship, and that one scene, I just went hardcore into, you know, synths and arpeggio synths and all that stuff. And that really set the tone for me of like, oh, we're going cosmic with this next one.
It really, I remember that scene a lot. It was a big, big, big moment, I think, for me.
Interstellar kind of Travel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the track.
It was good. Like, do you slowly regain the memory of the tracks, like, afterwards?
No, I vaguely... Yeah. Yeah. I can vaguely remember... So I can remember some stuff. I can recall some things.
Mm.
I just... You know, as far as I'm concerned... Well, creatively, you make stuff, and there's that phrase that I know I've said to you a lot, and I say to basically everybody who creates stuff, because it's the ultimate bane of their... of a creative's life is the inability to like pick up a new project because you know you're never gonna feel satisfied with it, or it's never gonna top the last one, or you're overthinking it rather than just making stuff. And so it's the old adage of like, art is never finished, it's only abandoned, right?
True. Yeah.
And so it's very much part of my psyche that like I just focus on this one thing and I have to think about, I have to recall all the previous motifs musically anyway. And so you just, you know, I create a little storage bank in my brain of all these motifs, and I can't remember them normally, but then I'll tap in and be like, oh yeah, that's the, like, oh, I need the motif for this. What was that? And then I look it up and I find it and I put it in, or I make, or I go, oh, this motif comes to mind. Oh, that was from that person's theme or that character's theme. And so, you know, when I'm done, I can't just keep working on it forever because I'll never be satisfied. So you just have to at a certain point pick a point where you go, I'm done with this, it's gone. And like, you know, I did the same with handing in essays at university. Just it's done now, it's gone, it's the past. And then I just immediately move on to something else. And I've done that so often that, you know, if I want to revisit my work, I almost have to revisit it from the point of view of somebody who just doesn't know it, or like has been told about it. Because if I sit and deconstruct it as the person that created it, everything I'll listen to, I'll think is bad.
Did you have any kind of like times this season working that were like maybe more difficult than others?
Oof. Yeah, I think there was one, right? There was a point that I made a track. I can't remember what track it was.
Might have been Take Off.
Maybe. Or something where I made a track and it sounded not what you envisioned with the scene.
Oh yeah, no, I remember now what you're talking about. That was the top of episode 3.
Right.
Where they've got the first kind of warp out and they've got the ship coming in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so when something is, you know, not good the first run, I have to take a hard reset on it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no soft reset. And so and that's difficult for me. Like, I'll just have to go, all right, well, that's no good. And so every time I try to start again, I'll just start recreating the thing I did the first time. And I have to do a firm reset, and that often means just going away and like coming back another day, which is difficult to do because you have to motivate yourself to start. And if your motivation is, right, I have to start doing this thing that was not good that one time, it's a harder thing to come back to. And then you start on a negative and it doesn't come out right, and the first sign of it going wrong is just like another sign of your own inadequacy. You know, so that.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean, but then I guess you do at the end of the day pull it through, and you did end up coming out with a great track. You know,
like, you get through it. You just have to take the L sometimes. You know, just got to accept that you know not everything is going to be a win.
Well, I mean, like, how many scripts and how many outlines have I thrown out?
Yeah, it's true. Like this season. This upcoming season, season 2, you wrote 3 years ago?
Yeah.
While we were like hanging that. Out in, like, living by the Bournemouth train station and, like, we hadn't, and nobody listened to the show.
Yeah.
Like, it can't be the same as that because we've done this whole thing, you know, between then.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just have to move forward and you have to redo stuff. And
the thing is, like, when I decided, okay, I'm going to redo it, when I was redoing it, the outline and everything, even then I felt like the same thing where I was just going back and recreating the old thing. And it's like, that's not what we're doing.
It doesn't work.
We're doing something else. I've got to find a fresh take on it.
Because you can't unwalk the path you've walked down.
Exactly.
you tread the grass down in the way that you've gone, and so you, when you walk out trying to walk a new way, if you follow your instincts, which you should do as an artist, is you should follow your instincts. A lot of your instincts are going to be the same instincts as last time, and you have to go, no.
Yep.
We're not doing that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And it got easier kind of the further along I went, but kind of like when I had that same jumping off point, which, you know, for people who've listened to Investigation is kind of the end of season one, the end of Investigation, that jumping off point, kind of, yeah, my instincts went all the same places. And it's like, there is kind of some degree of, okay, I need to follow some of this, but then I also need to like break off from other bits of it.
Yeah.
Which I think I have done. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good show, man. What is this, an interview of you now?
Apparently. I hijack intros, I hijack interviews.
Yeah.
Going back to the music, do you have any moments kind of in this season in Facility that are...
Wrong do you show.
Do you have any moments kind of like in Investigation that, that stand out for you, something you're quite proud of?
I remember feeling proud about them when I do them. It's just remembering particular musical moments. First thing that comes to mind was what we were talking about before, was actually a slightly more difficult moment. Philandering.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That
so
was the first track.
I went into this show knowing that we were going to go for a more noir take, and I was going to go for more of a slightly jazzier version of what we've done before, has heavy synths, slightly jazzier. And so because that was a thing I had never done before, right, not even close. I think the start of Investigation was that. Or maybe not. But there was a point in my... I may have even talked about this on the last interview. I have no musical training in any way.
Sure, yeah.
I'm no good. I don't...
It's not true.
I don't function. I'm not trained even remotely.
Sure.
And so I remember being like...
Yeah, but you're teaching yourself how to play the piano, so like,
how do chords work? Like, what's a chord? I was at the point where I was like, what is a chord? How does a chord work? And so I looked up one YouTube video. It was like a 5-minute long YouTube video about chords. And I watched maybe 20 seconds when they explained the difference between major and minor. And I'm like, that's all I need. But then I was like, but I then had to come back later that day and be like, jazz chords. And it's just like, oh, you're like... It's like one, three, five, and six are the notes that you have to play for one of those chords. And I'm just like, all right, well, I know that now. And
then you did it.
And so I made the decision that I was going to do the first track or a track in that, in that first episode of, I'm just going to go like no tempo. I'm going to fit the tempo to the scene. I'm going to do it crazy jazz and I'll see what comes out. And I'll throw myself in at the deep end. And Philandering was what was produced.
Yeah.
And it's quite an uncomfortable song.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was for an uncomfortable exchange between Richard and this woman. And so I made it and I was really waded halfway through that particular mire and just was like, I don't know why I'm doing this or what is happening right now and why musically I've made these choices, but I just have to like pull through. And when I got to the end of it, what I made was, you know, it did what I wanted to do. And in the tracks later on, I knew that the later tracks would be more formal than that one. And so when I got into the groove of the show, of that season's like musical style, I knew I was like, all right, well, now I can, you know, this does have a structure, this does have a function. And I went back to philandering and I was like, yeah, this is that, that's just one track that I decided to do that way. But if you throw yourself in at the deep end like that, it doesn't always work out.
Sink or swim.
But then later in that episode, Rick's theme, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which is, what was it?
5,000 credits.
5,000 credits, yeah. So it was, which was an absolute ripoff of like
the good, bad, and the ugly.
Fields of Gold, the good, bad, and the ugly. But nevertheless, I was very proud of that one. And so every moment where I have that same Rick's sort of swell, he's not called Rick in the show, but in in my brain he's Ranger Rick, and that was what I put into that track. And so every time I've got that sort of Ranger Rick style swell, I'm quite like, oh, that's pretty good. And I made that synth for that, that sort of sounds like, I call it Stellar Steam Whistle, I think. And that, just that, that sort of signifies, gives a very Western feel. But then I also had a Strange Activity for Diana. And so a lot of times I'm finding some blend between Diana's theme and Richard's theme, and then Axel's theme later on. And Axel's theme's great because Axel's theme works double time and single time, right? So it works as part of this very slow chordal change, but it also works with these lots of little notes flittering around. Can you tell I'm not professionally musically trained?
No, but it's good to know.
The words I use. But yeah, like... And so finding those those moments where two themes work perfectly, almost often by accident on my part.
I mean, the number of times that you've messaged me and said, I don't know how I've done this, but I found these two themes go together perfectly.
I think I must in some way know what I'm doing, right?
Sure.
Because I'm following the same instinct every time. I know what feeling I'm trying to get for each character. And in the back of my brain, I have all this these music vaguely memorized. And it comes out muscle memory when I start the process of making them a track. And so I often find that I've fit two themes together perfectly well. Like, it happened yesterday, right?
Yeah.
I'm creating a speculative track for season two.
Yeah.
Right? Another lyrical one.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a second, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily want to, but it's about a certain character.
Yeah.
I made the start of this track.
Yeah.
And then I realized that it was that character's theme. Fit to slot perfectly in there. And I'm like, oh, it's because I'm making this character and I'm summoning the same feelings about this character that I've always summoned every time I've made every track involving them. So I think those are probably quite proud moments, because I just go, oh, this is functional. Or maybe some of the tracks where it's a lot of layers, but they still work, because that makes me feel like I've actually got more complex in my music.
I mean, your music has definitely got more complex from Facility to Investigation, I think.
Yeah, and so those are moments I'm proud of, because they make me feel like I'm a functional composer that actually does stuff.
Sure.
Rather than just like, well, because I started this just I did geometrically fabricated, where I just like off the bat at your place once when we were in uni,
literally on my bed messing around with like, GarageBand,
and so that was sort of like, it was made to order, right? Or I was pitching it to you, like, hey, I've got this song, you can use that. And in my head at that point, I'm like, oh, I can just regularly make tracks and we'll drop them in. But then for facility, you're just like, hey, could you do the entire soundtrack? And I wanted to do it. So I was like,
Yeah,
probably. I don't know, but sure. I can certainly try.
Yeah.
Right? I can definitely try to do that. And so when I get a song that I think sounds like that, it's when you run it through the mastering process,
yeah,
and then you send it back to me like a week or two later, and
yeah,
I listen to it and I don't immediately go, oh god, this sounds like garbage. I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. Those are my ones I'm proud of.
And you wrote a song this season. You wrote a song with lyrics.
It was so weird. That's so weird that I've done that. It's not a full song, but I'm planning on maybe one day. I'm planning on making a full version of this song for this
Outer
for
Sky.
Season two.
Yeah,
no, for season two.
I'm
planning on making
a
full version of this new track, and so I guess I'll go back and make a full version of Outer Sky because it's what I'm thinking about. But yeah, that's like a song.
Yeah, with lyrics. And you wrote the lyrics, you did all the production, and then it was sung by Hedley Knights from Space Junk.
Yeah, I thought that. I was like, when you played me his voice, I'm like, I feel like I know this guy's voice.
Yeah.
And then you introduced him to me as like the guy that sang Outer Sky. And I was like, oh, cool. And then I met him again at some other event.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, this is Hedley. He does We Fix Space Junk. I'm like, oh, cool. And in my brain, two different people.
Yeah, no, same person.
Absolutely two different people. And then I met him for a third time at Pod UK.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's both of those guys. So, oops. But no, it was crazy. It was crazy cool to get somebody to actually sing a thing that I wrote. You know.
Also, really big moment in the season for Richard, I think, you know, like a really pivotal and important moment for him in that.
Just finding a joy in a small thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's the basis of good character, right? It's humanization.
I mean, yeah, it's like we held that for like what, a couple minutes of just Richard listening to a song.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is a crazy thing. Like, that's a big amount of time in a 20-minute episode.
In
that's like
podcast,
what, 10% of the episode.
Yeah,
like is just him listening to a song, and it's just like, well, couldn't you
but
be doing something
humans.
Better with
these
the
are
time?
Human
but
beings.
Like, yeah,
no, because if you get hung up on making every scene, every single scene, hyper functional, and every beat is hyper functional, and. Well, humanization is functional.
Yeah.
It's showing an aspect of a character which you need to show in order to create a person. And so, I think it has purpose. But let's not sit around and fluff up our egos on every single creative choice we make. Like with a goddamn, like people just don't make humanized characters anymore. And I think our choice to do 25 straight minutes of this guy listening to a song that I wrote was really the best use of the audience's time. And I get to decide that.
Yeah.
I get to make that choice.
Well, people seem to respond to that and they really liked it.
I think people liked it. So that's good.
So that's the important thing. So I wanted to ask a bit about the acting that you did this season.
Yeah. Not Jeffrey.
Not
Although
Jeffrey.
I did some Jeffrey as well.
You played Amos Dent.
Yeah.
The
a joke
voice actor.
Character that you came up with.
Yeah.
What?
No, no. How did Amos come into being?
It was just being dumb, me being the stupid person and chucking my phone around willy-nilly, uncaring for my property.
And you just said
now, so I've learned my lesson.
Yeah, but you said no. You haven't. You absolutely haven't.
Nah, you're right. Yes.
You said to me, I want to play the drunken robe-wearing voice actor.
Yeah, well, because it works so well in Galaxy Quest. In Galaxy Quest, just like the main character is just this like drunken actor who plays the hero.
Yeah.
And I just was like, it would be very funny to play just like, I wear a robe and I'm drunk all the time and I just throw stuff about and this character is just trash. But he like plays the voice of such a different character to himself.
Yeah.
Right? Like he has to absolutely put on a voice to be like Jeffrey is so refined and every
it's
word
not his
is
voice
deliberate.
In any way.
But he just like mumbles and gibbers. But I also wanted to do a funny moment where he drunkenly just does a Jeffrey impression.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's not
and he
even
can't
good.
Do one.
It's not good because he can't do it. It's just no explanation for this character at all. Just like, oh, hello, I'm Jeffrey. Like, you can't even do it. You can't even
get
do
up,
Jeffrey.
Amos.
Because he did it in like one, like maybe 1 week's worth of like marathon recording sessions for the, you know, for the collective. And then stops.
Never again.
But like everybody hears his voice constantly, including him. But that was the conception of this character, obviously.
Yeah.
And he's become more of a part of the show now.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a story purpose.
He is.
You know, he's going to be relevant. Or is
he? Yeah.
I don't know. What can I say about that?
I mean, we just
probably
said
nothing,
he
right?
was going to be.
Yeah, he's relevant. He's a relevant story character.
He is a relevant story character
You know,
now.
He's definitely relevant. You know, he's relevant to the investigation plot anyway.
And he will be in season 2. I haven't written him into season 2 yet.
Well,
not there yet.
But you know his arc.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's got an arc.
Oh, yeah!
Everyone has an arc apart from the characters that we don't give an arc to.
Yeah, that's how arcs work.
Yeah.
Yep.
What?
So what was it like kind of recording Amos? Because we had kind of, there were two recording sessions. We did pickups, but we also had like
difficult.
One recording session.
Difficult,
that was
actually.
Genuinely crazy.
Difficult because it's such an improvised character.
Yeah.
And so you do separate takes of the same improvisation and it doesn't necessarily summon the same energy, you know. Like it's like catching lightning in a bottle, dude. I throw out this absolute gold, this unique like perfect
no but do you remember
humor,
when you did like that absolutely perfect
you
beautiful
can only
take
do that
and
once.
Then I didn't record it.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
That's it's horrible.
Yeah, well, so you just, you know, so that was, it was difficult and like going back and re-recording same bits of improvisation. And we had to do that, like...
Yeah.
There was a time we had to do retakes for that, like,
yeah,
months
Yeah, a
after.
Lot of retakes.
Months,
just
months
just
after.
Simply because of recording quality on that first session, I think.
Yeah, we had a plan to record it in the studio in the back, but it's not weatherproof, really, so
no,
there was a
it was
lot
raining.
Of rain. But yeah. And so, yeah, I just came up to London and re-recorded all of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
essentially, like, yeah, it's a big mishmash of like kind of like stuff from that session, yeah. Retakes, and we tried to kind of match it as best we could and kind of keep the energy of the
but
scene.
That's, again, that's just the coming together of lots of factors of the rain and being very improvisational and
yeah,
you know. But I think, yeah, it was interesting, and I'm looking forward to playing that character possibly again.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I'm also looking forward to getting back to Jeffrey, like original Jeffrey. I haven't done original
OG
Jeffrey for years.
Well,
like,
the thing is,
years.
That's the thing with most of the cast. I think, like, you know, Amy is quite nervous to go back to OG Nora.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's. I think the headspace we have to get into is it being very naturalistic, because that first season was designed to be very naturalistic, and you've got this disconnect between these very naturalistic people and these almost like caricature copies of them throughout the universe, just like infinite weird
variations
and bizarre you know, like everyone and
the bill,
like the weirdest array of Richards and the bill, of course, the bill,
which no one really know about and they're gonna find out and, about.
Oh, but yeah, but we'll make it eventually, and so this interview is gonna make sense. But the bill, oh,
absolutely,
right?
Come back in 2 years and you'll be like, ah, yes.
So maybe. Just so many Richards, like
so many, just a ridiculous amount.
Like, you know, so everyone's got. They're these weird little caricature duplicates of these. And so I think, yeah, it is going to be difficult to go back to these original characters. But I think it's quite... I think once we get into the hang of it, because really what the issue is that you can conceive of who Vass is as a version of Nora, and you can see... You can conceive of who Evers is as a version of Nora in your brain. So I think once we get into the swing of the original characters, I think our problem with them right now is that we can't conceive of who they are firmly. At, like, we're looking at them like, oh, what caricatured version of this character is it?
But they're it is not, just they're the character.
It's a person. It's the naturalistic version of them. And so when we get into the hang of it, we'll it's like with Jeffrey, you know, I had to do very over the top evil Jeffrey, and yet normal Jeffrey is just sort of like, yes, I am a robot.
Yeah, very much so. Very true.
And I think that works because he starts off in that season very over the top, and he becomes more naturalistic. So for my own acting, I feel like I can conceive of that pretty well, and I think we just have to work on making sure that, you know, naturalistic Nora is a clear version of Nora in the minds of us making, because obviously she's a clear version of Nora in the show. You know, she's such a strong character. They're all such strong characters, and you can clearly tell who they are as people. But it's acting method, right?
Yeah.
Of like the, you know, you can get yourself in the headspace of, oh, I'm going to be incredibly posh Richard now, and then the headspace of, oh, I'm going to be, you know, quite sort of gunslinger Richard now, and just to get into the head of like normal person Nora might be slightly more difficult.
Yeah, agreed.
But I think that's a challenge we can overcome quite easily.
Yeah, agreed. I think, for some, you know, we've already started recording with Laura for Olivia. So I think we're getting there.
Oh, but are you ready to record Olivia Gwynplaine at some point? That's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be real fun. Okay.
It's the absolute reverse for Laura. She's got to go from normal naturalistic to just
insane.
Ape insane. Just like mad horse crazy, dude. Just right off the rails. So,
why don't you tell everyone a bit about what you've got coming up in our orphans world?
What I'm writing.
Yeah.
Orphans X.
Is that the working title that we're gonna tell everyone?
Let me be clear, all right. We have a firm, definitive title, but it's subject to change. But cannot stress this enough. 100% committed to the title we've chosen. All right, I am married to the title we've chosen, but I'm willing to cheat. You know, it's set in stone, right? It's absolutely set in stone. We have decided. It's 100%. It's not going to change now. But, you know, it's like liquid stone, right? It's like cement. You know, cement is liquid stone,
you definitely
have
changed the title during production.
Yeah. Cement is liquid stone, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Because I got this loan shark of sorts on my back, right? And he was like... 50 cubic tons of stone is what he wants, and not a kilogram more. So I've got 100 cubic tons of cement, and I'm really hoping that that's going to satiate him, because I could lose my legs over this, dude. For real.
What are you talking about?
Cement! Liquid stone is what I'm talking about. I feel like that's perfectly clear. What your issue is.
So what's Orphans X?
Oh. Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I was just trying to talk about problems in my life with my friend, but Yeah, this show, I guess. Orphans X. There's two titles, and I'm bouncing back and forth between them. Yeah. May even end up on something completely different.
But for now, it's Orphans X.
For now, working title Orphans X. It's a Xavier based season.
Hence X.
It's gonna firmly feature a Xavier unit and a Charles unit and a Catherine unit, because I feel like we gave some protagonist time to everybody else that we haven't necessarily given to Xavier and to Charles and to Catherine. And so fundamentally, I want to explore Xavier as a more humanized character, because you know what Xavier is as a character. He's an assassin, and Charles is very diplomatic and not always in a trustworthy way. And Catherine is a replacement for the Olivias. So I want to explore those. I want to explore interesting takes on those people and try and find something, you know, I want to try and find something valuable in Xavier. I want to find something valuable in Charles and in, you know, I guess it wouldn't be too much of a spoiler to say a collective Charles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, a Charles that worked for the collective.
Yeah.
And I want to find something valuable and human in a collective officer. I want to find something valuable and human in a Xavier, which is so mired in, like, just... He's clearly so prone to violence as a strain that it just comes so naturally to them. So how... And I think if I can try and tell a humanized, if this character can find redemption in themselves, then you can find redemption in anyone. And I believe that. And that's sort of the story I want to tell. Is I want to explore redemption. I want to explore finding an identity in a world where your identity is written out for you. If something's written indelibly on your mind, on your heart, as a human, as a person, which I think we all have parts of ourselves that we have to square with who we want to be. And so, yeah, I want to explore that. I want to explore masculinity in a way, because that's a topic I think we're both interested in. And yeah, I really want to, that's more or less what I want to go for, is finding, you know, finding something worthwhile in people who there would otherwise be not necessarily something worthwhile in.
Yeah. I like the sound of the series. I think everyone else is going to really enjoy the series when it's done.
A lot of characters for it that have bled in to all the stuff you've done.
Yeah. It's very much like being like part of our writing process right now is weaving them together. It's like making sure that they're woven into the same world and consequences from one flow into another.
Yeah. And I think, you know, initially this is the process of me like taking your world and taking your characters and making new versions of those. And so I think it's quite natural for that to go the other way.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, these people fit into your series as well. This is all part of the same show.
I mean, we've got Xavier Makhanov coming up in season two, who is a fundamental creation of yours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the live show, which I think we recorded, did we not?
We did. We haven't released it yet.
We're planning on releasing it.
Will be released, yeah.
But
Olivia Gwynplaine.
Olivia Gwynplaine, Dickie Bow, fundamentally.
Dickie Bow as well.
Dickie Bow is great. I love that idea. Mm. That I just did as a goof.
Whoops.
and, you know, but I love him as a character. And so, yeah. I think it's going to be interesting to do another take on it. And I hope, you know, I hope that people enjoy my writing as much as they enjoy the rest of the show.
I think they will.
I hope so.
Right.
I want to. Yeah. Great.
Shall we say goodbye to all of our friends on the internet?
Yes. Internet friends.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, internet friends.
We love you.
Well, let's, you know. Let's not go into parasocial relationships, right? Like, you shouldn't be encouraging that sort of emotional bond between people who fundamentally don't know each other. I feel like there has to be a more a hybrid version of a professional and personal relationship between internet creators and the people who enjoy their content. You know, because this is a new
love. You.
It's a new medium. I don't think we necessarily need to infect it with parasocial pseudo-emotional jargon. Like, we enjoy that you enjoy. We hope that we can create more stuff that you enjoy, and we're glad that you enjoyed it. We've met a few of you now.
Yeah, lovely UK, people.
And you're all great. And
yeah. Keep an eye on our Twitter and our social media and our feed to see if we ever do any other kind of live events. Because, you know, I'm talking to some people, but maybe doing some more. Nothing in stone, nothing firmed up, but potential stuff. So keep an eye. We'd love to see you.
So I guess in that sense, I love all of you.
Fundamentally,
we live in a... The human body is a casket of feelings. Only our own personal motivations and feelings matter, and all other people are just puppets.
Yeah.
Puppets right. For my enjoyment.
Jesus Christ.
And that's what you are, Zach, and that's what all the people who listen to this show are. You mean nothing to me.
Sure. Sure.
But yeah, no, we appreciate you. You guys are great.
Bye.
What a weird note to end this on.
I know. Jesus Christ. I'm going to stop the recording now.
Sure.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.